5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome inside the Quicken Loans Studios on this Friday night at Yahoo Sports Radio. We have got a ton of ground to cover over the next 2 hours of our show. A very big week as we recap National Signing Day, Super Bowl 49, and we also will take time to hit on some college basketball. But it is time now to head out to the Four Corners and the Land of Enchantment and catch up with our good friend from Fox Sports New Mexico, talking about Steve Bordstein, the shining star out there. He is joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. And I just have to wonder, what is on the agenda for this weekend? I mean, there's not going to be any football. What in the world is Steve Bordstein going to be doing on a Friday night?
Horse racing. I'm getting ready for the Triple Crown run. You know, we're just a little more than 2.5 months away from the Kentucky Derby, and we got big prep races going on around the country. So I'm going to be doing that and scouring the television for all sorts of interesting things to watch. No, really, it's college basketball for me now. Hockey, I watch a lot more hockey now. So yeah. You know, it's just you find new things to entertain yourself now during the non-football time of year.
Well, we've got a lot of other things to entertain all of our listeners across the country. A number of subjects I want to get into that hopefully you can provide some clarity, Steve Bordstein. So let's start. I want to get a fresh perspective on Super Bowl 49. Did the Patriots? Did they truly win it, or did those Seahawks, did they give it away?
I can see both arguments, and I've heard both arguments, and I've made both arguments. But at the end of the day, it's Tom Brady. It's the New England Patriots won that game. Seattle didn't lose that game on the last play or the interception by Malcolm Butler. They lost the game, I think, late in the third quarter, early in the fourth quarter, with kind of questionable play calling. You have a 10-point lead on New England. You have a chance to, you know, basically run the ball down New England's throat. I mean, Marshawn Lynch had been averaging 5 yards a carry. And instead they decided to get cute. Instead they decided to, you know, throw some, I thought, questionable passes. I thought they had some opportunities there to really, you know, close the game out, and they didn't do that. And, you know, we've watched enough football in our lives that you can't let Tom Brady breathe. I thought it was surgical precision in that fourth quarter drive that ran about 4.5 minutes, resulting in the Edelman touchdown that gave New England the lead. You saw that. You saw that drive, and that was typical old school Tom Brady right there at his finest. And I thought the interesting angle was, you know, if you're Dan Quinn and you're the defensive coordinator of, you know, arguably the greatest defense since the 85 Bears, how do you explain that meltdown? How do you explain, you know, those guys being so wide open? Yeah, I know there were injuries. Obviously, Richard Sherman was playing at less than 100%. You had the one defender who got the interception in the first quarter. He missed the rest of the game because he tore his wrist up on that interception. But, you know, that defense got exposed, you know, in a big way, I thought, in the fourth quarter of that game on that drive. It was old school Tom Brady. I understand the argument that says that, you know, you run the ball on second down at the 1.5 yard line. I understand that argument, but I also can understand, you know, wanting to play out the clock. There were 26 seconds left, and I understand Pete Carroll and Daryl Bevel when they both said that they wanted to give New England absolutely no time left on that clock. I guess the question to me is, if you want to run down the clock, why do you throw that pass with Wilson in the shotgun formation? That play was a bang-bang play. It literally took about 2.5 seconds before Butler makes the interception there. Why not just run a read option? Let Wilson roll out. Let him find a receiver in the back part of the end zone, or just throw it into the 30th row at University of Phoenix Stadium. You would have run down far more time. You would have run down 7 or 8 seconds, and then you still would have had third and goal at the 1.5 yard line, pound it with Marshawn Lynch, win the game. So it's a long answer to your question, but I think New England won that game.
Hey, Steve Bortstein joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He is with Fox Sports New Mexico. And as we recap Super Bowl 49, I mean, how much should Pete Carroll be accountable for that kind of head-scratching call?
Well, I mean, he's the last line of defense. He's the face of that franchise, so it is on him. I think it's ironic that we've been in this position before with Pete Carroll. You go back to 2006, the national championship game, USC versus Texas.
Fourth and two.
USC has the ball in the Texas 45-yard line. They can close out Texas, get the first down, run down the clock, and win. Instead, you've got Reggie Bush, your Heisman Trophy award-winning running back, on the sidelines, and slow and easily tacklable Lendale White running the ball on that play. Then you've got the fourth and five at the 5-yard line. Vince Young's been running the ball on you all night long, and instead you decide to blitz up the middle and allowing Vince Young the right corner of the end zone and wins the national championship. This is not the first time we've been here with Pete Carroll, and you know he'll do the right thing. He'll fall on the sword and say it was his fault, and at the end of the day, it kind of is. I mean, he's the guy that's got to accept the responsibility. I guess my question for the future is going to be, how much of the locker room does he lose? How much of the locker room does Darrell Bevell lose in that situation?
Well, Steve, you bring up a great point, because you know you have to wonder, what kind of hangover effect will this have on the Seahawks moving forward?
I think it has to have a hangover effect. I mean, you're Marshawn Lynch. You're the guy who's been the offense on that team. Forget Russell Wilson for a second, because we all know that Russell Wilson is a, quote, special, end quote, kind of talent. He's not your prototypical 6'5" quarterback. So he's the guy that, you know, he makes the plays happen. He makes things happen in the backfield. Marshawn Lynch is your offense. And now you tell me, with 26 seconds to go, no, we're not going to give you the ball, Marshawn. No, we're going to let this crazy thing happen in the back of the end zone, whatever, but then we're going to throw this bizarre pass right into the middle of the coverage in front of everybody so that, with the possibility of getting it picked off. I understand there was quite a bit of tension in that locker room between Pete Carroll and Marshawn Lynch. Apparently, they didn't speak to each other after the game was over. Lynch stormed out of the locker room. I would imagine there's going to be some dissent in that locker room, and you know, it's either going to be on Bevell or it's going to be on Pete Carroll. But, I mean, even if you're offensive coordinator Pete Carroll, I mean, if you're offensive coordinator Darrell Bevell, excuse me, how do you look Marshawn Lynch in the face and say, yeah, sorry, bad call? How do you do that? I think there's going to be some carryover to this.
You talk about Marshawn, but let's love on Malcolm Butler. I mean, that game-changing interception, what a beautiful example of just continuing to work hard and just having that unwavering belief and staying ready. I mean, he was an undrafted free agent from a division school in West Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, and there were two great stories in that game, and Malcolm Butler is truly the best one of them all. You know, and you know, you look at the game that Chris Matthews had, the wide receiver for Seattle. No one had even heard of this guy. He was working at a Foot Locker a few months ago. There were some great stories in this game.
Malcolm Butler was working at Popeye's like 4 years ago.
Right. So, I mean, there's some great stories in the game. Malcolm Butler, you know, he has that great play there. So, you know, great credit to him to being there. And they had talked about how they'd worked on that play. They had worked on that defense, you know, in leading up to the Super Bowl. And I think not enough credit it has been given. And obviously, you go back to the last couple of weeks, you had the Deflategate story. You had all the speculation and all the chicanery with that story. Bill Belichick, I mean, how great a coaching job is that? I mean, it's a masterful coaching job. He doesn't get enough credit because everyone looks at him like the, you know, the dark Sith underlord of the dark side of the galaxy or whatever. But he's a genius. And you know, they drew up a great game plan. Offensively, they picked apart one of the best defenses in the last quarter century in the National Football League. And you know, that's a credit to Tom Brady, a seventh-round draft pick. You know, that's a credit to Bill Belichick, who's done this with a patchwork offense, you know, and a patchwork defense that, you know, we don't give enough credit to. These are not your, you know, blue-chip guys. These are not your first-round guys. These are guys who come together, and it fits that Belichick profile, and I would argue this is one of his more impressive coaching jobs.
Hey, you're listening to the voice of Steve Bortstein from Fox Sports New Mexico tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to step aside for our very first commercial break. We'll be rejoined, and I'm going to talk to Steve, his view of Tom Brady. Obviously, he solidified his legacy with his fourth Super Bowl win. We want to get Steve's insight on that. We will be right back with much, much more here at YSR. Welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell, as we continue on this Friday night, taking you through the fastest 2 hours in radio. We want to hear from you. Join us online at Twitter, at eRadioSports, and you can email the show at Elissa@YahooSportsRadio.com. Always talking to one of our favorite guests, that is Steve Wartstein from Fox Sports New Mexico. We're doing a full recap on Super Bowl 49, and it is time now. I want to get your view of Tom Brady, Steve. I mean, he solidifies his legacy with his fourth Super Bowl win in Super Bowl 49. Just your take on him.
Well, I've always avoided the argument on my show and about, oh, who's the greatest quarterback of all time? Because inevitably it always turns into an argument.
Is it Brady? Is it Montana?
Mm-hmm. It always turns into an argument between fans. And I will say this about Brady, you know, and when you compare Brady and Montana, I think this is where the comparison is second to none. Montana had Rice. Montana had Taylor. Montana had Dwight Clark. Montana had great receivers throughout much of his career. He also had arguably one of the better running backs in Super Bowl era, in Roger Craig. He had Tom Rathbun in that backfield. And he had Bill Walsh, who was an offensive-minded genius. You have Tom Brady, who didn't come in with all the hype and hyperbole that Montana did when he came into the NFL. And arguably, who have been his best wide receivers outside of Randy Moss and Rob Gronkowski? This is a quarterback who's gotten it done with average receivers at best. Brandon LaFell, really? I mean, I think when you look at the history, when we go back in history, you'll see the numbers, and then they'll argue, okay, well, Brady had this many touchdowns, Montana had this many touchdowns. Okay, but take Jerry Rice away from San Francisco, and how many touchdowns does Joe Montana have? Take John Taylor, take Dwight Clark out of all those games. How many of those touchdowns are really there? I mean, I think when you look at these two quarterbacks side by side, it's important to also know, you know, who they were throwing the ball to. And when you look at Brady's two wins also, two of these four wins that he had, or even two of the Super Bowls he had, you know, there's the New York Giants catch, David Tyree, the incredible catch here. A few years ago against the Giants. There's the catch that Jermaine Kearse makes that puts Seattle in a position to win the game. I mean, they almost lose those Super Bowls, whereas San Francisco, blowout win against Dallas, blowout win against Denver. They beat teams that they were so fundamentally better than that, I mean, I'm not taking anything away from Joe Montana, but I think you have to look at Tom Brady's line of work here, his body of work, and I think his numbers not only stack up better from a statistical angle, but from a personnel angle, they were better games, I think, than the games that San Francisco had and Joe Montana had.
Steve Wartstein from Fox Sports New Mexico joining us on our Progressive Celebrity Guest Line, talking about in his view of Tom Brady. Did you believe, though, that he was a Super Bowl, the MVP?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he threw 50 passes in the game. He was 36, I believe, completions. He's the MVP of the game. I understand Malcolm Butler makes the interception. I understand Julian Edelman with the touchdown at the end of the game.
Right.
But for the first two touchdowns of that game, for the first two quarters when they scored those two touchdowns, and then that last drive, that's an MVP performance. To me it was a no-brainer. I don't even entertain the discussion of Edelman or Butler, the guy who makes the interception there. It's Tom Brady, because the most valuable player is the guy who wins the game for you, and Tom Brady won that game for New England.
Okay, so let's step back here. Let's talk about Deflategate. Let's just give me a quick hit on that. I mean, it obviously dominated the Patriots coverage prior to the Super Bowl. I mean, does Super Bowl 49, does it come with an asterisk because of that, because of Deflategate?
Absolutely not, because if that was going to come with an asterisk, then I would entertain the argument that you would go back and look at hundreds of football games that have been played over the years since the NFL has had that policy in place, that they look at the footballs 2.5 hours before the game, they sign off on them, and then they leave them with the quarterbacks. They leave them with those teams up until game time. If this had been an issue in week 6 of the regular season between two lousy teams like Jacksonville and Tennessee, and I'm certainly not trying to disparage people who are listening in Jacksonville or Tennessee this evening, but it wouldn't have mattered. No one would have been talking about this issue. But because it's Tom Brady, and because New England, and because New England is that team that people love to hate on, naturally we made a big deal out of it. And it turns out the NFL even admitted earlier this week that there might have been only one of the 11 allegedly bad footballs that was really bad after all. And, you know, the most we got out of this was videotape of a guy walking into a bathroom carrying footballs. The National Football League should have more videotape evidence on this. And that goes back to this issue, it goes back to Ray Rice, it's just a myriad of really silly decisions, and it was a much ado about nothing, and it should never, ever be talked about again.
Okay, we're quickly running out of time. Give me a quick hit on the Browns, the situation that they're under, Josh Gordon and Johnny Manziel.
Josh Gordon, it's unfortunate. I think the Browns are going to be done with him. Johnny Manziel, I think they have a business decision to make. I understand you want to see him do well. You want to see him recover from whatever it is that he's in rehab for. But from a business standpoint, if you're the Cleveland Browns organization, you want him to do well. But do you want him to do well while you're paying for it at the same time? I think the Browns have to look at that issue. I think they have a justifiable reason to be worried about Johnny Manziel. Because what happens, even if he goes through rehab and does well, but then he screws up somewhere down the road, they're the ones footing the bill on that. And as far as I'm concerned, from a business standpoint, you know, there's one strike too many, and it might be the first strike for Johnny Manziel.
What, and the Browns used a first-round draft pick on the most polarizing player.
Yeah, well, and it goes to show again that first-round draft picks don't always work out well. Sometimes it's the third round pick. Sometimes it's the fourth round pick. And sometimes you have to be leery of guys with that much hype and that much bad information, around them. Kevin Sumlin earlier this week was on Fox Sports and said, you know, that maybe we could have done things differently. That leads me to believe that they knew he was a problem child. They knew what they were getting into with him. And maybe they could have done things differently, and maybe teams should have been more aware of what they were getting into with Johnny Manziel.
Hey, Steve Bortstein with us about another minute at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. Talk to me about USC and how things turned out. It seems like all is alive and well with your Trojans after National Signing Day.
Yeah, it was a banner day, depending on which recruiting service you subscribe to. They were either first, second, or third in the nation as far as recruiting classes are concerned. And it's nice. First year back under no sanctions any longer. They're still going to be a little bit short as far as who they can, as far as the numbers they can put on the field. I think they're still going to be around 75. And, you know, recruiting classes are great and good numbers there, but it has to prove itself on the field. I think the number of defensive players they came up with are fantastic, and hopefully they'll work out well, and hopefully USC is back in its rightful place someday, competing for a national championship.
Well, thankfully.
Sooner rather than later.
Yeah, USC finally, as you're talking about, that full allotment of scholarships and able to put together a very special roster. Steve Bortstein has been with us tonight at YSR, the Big East Sports Show, taking us through the fastest 2 hours in radio. Always does an outstanding job. And Steve-O, we look forward to talking some college basketball here in the next few months. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you.
Much more straight ahead. Stay close at YSR. Welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. We've always got you covered, and right now it is time to lace it up. We're going to talk some college basketball with a contributor from Slam Magazine. That, of course, is Lee Klein. He is the owner and operates the prestigious five-star basketball camps. He's been providing the helping hand over the past few weeks. We have focused so much on college football and NFL. We want to get up to speed with the latest in college basketball. And, of course, Lee is joining us on our Progressive Celebrity guest line right here at YSR. Good evening, Lee. How are you?
Doing fantastic. As we enter the dip of the roller coaster, we like to say, in the college basketball season, you start to feel the grind.
You are feeling... Mm-hmm.
This is that time in which teams are sort of, trying to make their stake to being tournament worthy.
Well, one of the teams that obviously is tournament worthy, the number one team in the country, Kentucky. They just keep their winning ways. Obviously had a solid win against Georgia. And now they are 22-0. And they've just got so much talent. I know that you and I, we've talked about it many times on the show. Andrew Harrison was terrific in that game on Monday against Georgia. Obviously, what I find so interesting is Kentucky is the fifth youngest team in the country. I mean, and they just continue to get better each and every week. And as you're talking about, especially in the grind of conference play.
Well, here we go. Many people on the schedule circled this stretch. Saturday in Gainesville and then next week in Baton Rouge as far as when the Wildcats could go down. And to be perfectly frank with you, right now, Florida does not look anything like the team that's capable of doing it, as they have struggled mightily this season. And Billy Donovan, maybe one of the best that's ever been, has not been able to replace that quartet of seniors from last year. And the Gators have struggled and are probably outside. So Kentucky, they miss Trey Lyles, who's got an illness, and has made them another front court person taken away from that front court depth. But they're going to continue to roll through Gainesville, and I think we'll be good through Baton Rouge. And really, I'm starting to believe that this team will be undefeated when conference play ends.
Well, potentially they will be after Saturday's game against the Gators. They could make it that perfect 23-0. But as I was just talking about, I mean, the fifth youngest team in the country, you just have to wonder how that will translate in conference play and when you're playing on the road, because it's not easy.
No, and we've seen now, Kentucky being, the best team in the country, but a lot of really good teams have struggled this week on the road and have hurt themselves. And there are teams that right now in the Power Conference that are trying to gain some sort of consistency and been then unable to do so because every night on the road something crazy happens. Probably the Big Ten is more indicative of that than any other conference, because the road in the Big Ten seems to take everyone down. And we've seen now this week Ohio State, after finally looking like maybe that top tier team, lose on the road to Purdue. So it's been crazy so far early going in conference play on the road.
The contributor with Slam Magazine and the owner and operates the prestigious five-star basketball camps, Lee Klein, is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We want to hear from you. Come on, join us online at Twitter at E Radio Sports. You can always email the show at Elissa@yahoosportsradio.com. Glad, Lee, tell all the listeners across the country where they can check you out too.
On Twitter at Lee Allen Klein. That's LeighAllenKlein. Certainly could catch up on the latest in college basketball at Slam Online, Slam Magazine. And then, for the passionate player, we want to work on your game at our five-star basketball camps that we hold throughout the country.
Okay, so Lee, we're talking about the big game on Saturday night, Kentucky and Florida. But I have to wonder, let me ask you this. Kentucky's success, I mean, how much has that helped the perception within the SEC?
I think that Kentucky's success has raised the entire conference, which to me is really, I think, overrated. I mean, this conference with Ole Miss and Arkansas, LSU and A&M sort of circling right behind Kentucky in that tournament-worthy category, I think these teams, quite frankly, are just inconsistent and haven't proven it to me that they deserve to be in. Great at home, struggle on the road. And the bottom part of the SEC, Missouri, South Carolina, Auburn, Vanderbilt, while young and promising long-term, to me, they're not great teams. So I think this SEC is overrated when you take Kentucky out of the mix, and that teams have benefited from, if you will, the Wildcats, when you talk about the conference rating and what people feel. The SEC is considered fourth best conference in the country right now.
Okay, so who is the number one conference in the country? Immediately coming to my mind is the Big 12 Conference, because of the depth and so many teams. What they're looking at, what potentially seven teams that could go to the tournament this year.
And the Big 12 has been considered throughout much of the year. It's finally, though, starting to become polarizing, similar to a lot of other conferences, as Texas has hit the skids and really has struggled of recent. And Texas was a team that carried a lot of weight in the non-conference part. Now they're 3-6 in the Big 12, and Kansas State has struggled. So I think this conference right now has four locks for the tournament. I think Baylor's the fifth. And from there, I don't know. Everyone's got work to do, in my opinion. But Kansas, once again, is running away with this Big 12, which is a remarkable run that Bill Self has the Jayhawks on.
Right, the Jayhawks at the forefront of the Big 12 Conference. But come on, got to give some love to my Oklahoma Sooners. I know you're a Texas, a proud Longhorn, but how about the Sooners with that big win against West Virginia? I mean, Bobby Huggins, he wasn't too pleased about that.
No, Lon Kruger is one of the best coaches in America.
I agree, yes.
He's got three gunslingers there, boy, that are as good. And this is a dangerous tournament team because they got guards that can score the basketball, and they got post guys that know their role. So this is a – Buddy Hield is as talented a scorer as anybody in the country. They got a good point guard in Jordan Woodard, and Isaiah Cousins is as good of a two-way player in the backcourt as there is. This is a really talented team. They've got TCU this weekend on the road. It's a game that you need to have. It's time now to get past this these slip-ups on the road. They, you know, they had that stretch where they lost at West Virginia, at Kansas, at Baylor. They got to take care of TCU on the road this weekend if this is a serious team that can get in sort of that upper conversation, top 15 caliber team. They have that type of talent.
Lee, what is your view of the TCU Horned Frogs? I see them continuing to move in the right direction.
I think they're moving in the right direction. I mean, it's difficult to play, you know, to not have a home court. I mean, let's start there. When you get into conference play, you need home court becomes so valuable. And they're playing at that Fort Worth Convocation Center.
Right.
They're building the new facility on campus. That's hurt this team. That's hurt Trent Johnson's team. I think he's done a great job. You have, you know, Anderson and Ziegler, two seniors that have, you know, given you some of their best work. You've seen some progression in Washburn and Kavarius Shepherd. But they've hit the skids now. They've lost eight out of the last nine. They got Oklahoma on Saturday. Then they got to play in Austin. This is sort of that bump of adversity that can this team that hasn't, you know, that had maybe some earlier stretches of winning, can they now feel confident enough to deal with this adversity, to steal one of these games that they desperately need to get to some sort of postseason tournament, even though it won't be the NCAA?
The contributor with Slam Magazine and the owner and operator of the prestigious five-star basketball camp, Lee Klein, has been joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Lee, we've got about 60 seconds. Talk to me about the job that Bobby Huggins is doing at West Virginia.
Yeah, it's been a fantastic job. And part of the reason, let's be honest, you see this, guys go, they have bad seasons and older guys, and you think that, you know, maybe the game has passed them by. But for Huggins, he's really done this with sort of a cast of characters of under recruited guys in style of play. He's you know, turned it up. They played up tempo. It's the system. Everyone's contributing, and he's done a fantastic job and really giving West Virginia not only a chance to be successful this season, but giving it some moxie and making Morgantown, playing in Morgantown, mm-hmm. something special once again, and people wanting to get out there and see their beloved Mountaineers play.
And he loves to apply that full court pressure, doesn't he?
No question. And it's their depth and everything. This is a tough tournament team as well. This is, you don't want to face them. They'll be a lot bigger, you know, a lot better when they get away from the Big 12 teams that scouted them so deeply. As they have, Daxter Miles has been a pleasant surprise as a freshman. You got the whole mix go, senior guards and Staten and Brown. And you've got some young guys, Devin Williams and Daxter Miles, that are, you know, are starting to get it. Javon Carter also has come on strong, another freshman. So this is a fun team to watch.
Always a lot of fun catching up with Lee Klein tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show, the contributor with Slam Magazine and the prestigious five-star basketball camps. He is the owner and operator, and he has been joining us on our Progressive Celebrity Guest Line. Stay warm up there in New York, and Lee, we'll talk to you here real soon next week, okay?
Sounds great. Be my pleasure.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead tonight. You stay close. Yes, welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios on this first Friday in February. It has been a very big week with National Signing Day on Wednesday. And with our next guest, we've got a number of subjects that we're going to hit on, especially Super Bowl 49. Always a pleasure to have back with us as we go under the helmet with our NFL and our Husker Gray. That, of course, is Jason Peter. Good evening, Jason.
How are you doing, E?
Hey, doing great. Of course, Jason is joining us on our Progressive Celebrity Guest Line. Let's get right to it. Super Bowl 49, it is now in the rearview mirror, and the Patriots win and edge the Seahawks. Your opinion on Pete Carroll's stunning call in that final play. What were the Seahawks thinking?
You know, it's so easy to second guess and an armchair quarterback, that final play. I can agree with most people mm-hmm. that, yes, you know, you have Marshawn Lynch in the backfield. You need 1 yard. Yeah, I mean, you know, you hand the ball to him. Common sense would tell you that. But guys like Pete Carroll, guys like Bill Belichick, they don't do what everybody else does. You know, I mean, there's a reason why these guys are playing and winning Super Bowls year after year. It's because they are the guys that break the tendencies. They're the guys that, you know, when the pack's going right, they're going left. And I don't have as big a problem with the play call as a lot of people. I just think the kid from New England made a tremendous play, one that, you know, if you're a coach and you're lining that thing up, and you want to go after one player, or you want your quarterback to you know, be thinking in one direction, that's kind of where you wanted him to go. I mean, it's a kid that, you know, they get off the street for the most part, and he's playing in his first Super Bowl, and you're kind of hoping that, you know, the veterans or you know, a guy like Russell Wilson would be able to you know, make the play there. And it's not Russell Wilson's fault. It's just that the kid from New England made a tremendous play. And I think we're getting so caught up in the play call when it really is about the play that corner made.
Well, Jason, how much should Pete Carroll be held accountable for that particular call?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's even Pete Carroll that's making that decision. You know, I mean, ultimately the buck stops with the head coach. But, you know, did Pete Carroll say, look, this is what I want to run here? I don't know. You know, and really, Pete Carroll is the type of guy that, you know, would probably cover for, you know, one of his assistant coaches. You know, he's the type of guy that will say, you know, don't blame him, put it all on me. And, you know, I think that's why players enjoy playing for him, coaches enjoy working for him. You know, when he's at the University of Southern Cal, the fan base, the same with, you know, the 12th man up there in Seattle, they love Pete Carroll. You know, he's energetic, he sucks you in, and
very passionate.
He is. And you know, I had the opportunity to work a summer camp up there at USC one summer, and obviously he was the head coach then, and just very energetic, very positive, very. You know, not to say that he's not intense, but, you know, it's very easy to understand why people like him so much.
Hey, we are Under the Helmet with Jason Peter this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Remember, love hearing from you. Join in on the conversation at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. So, got to ask you this, Jason. I mean, what are your expectations from Seattle from next season, and perhaps some of the lingering effects from that botched call?
With Pete Carroll running the show out there, I don't think it will be something that lingers with these guys. I think he's got a way of
regrouping,
you know, manipulating
them.
The situation to the point where, you know, they're going to be more motivated than ever, because they truly feel like, you know, they should have won that football game. They feel like they did win that football game. It was just, you know, one play at the end of the game, and ultimately that's what most NFL games come down to, usually, is a play here, a play there. Now, I mean, obviously the drama of having the Super Bowl, you know, I mean, I think that's where this whole, you know, was it the worst call ever? Was it the worst call ever? you know, I mean,
right?
It's always, you know, that's the world that we live in, right? I mean, the next guy who's coming through, he's going to be the greatest, or, you know, this guy is I've never seen a guy who can do it like this guy, and you know, it goes good and bad, you know. So on this case, it's the bad with the call.
I thought it was pretty cool, though, how Tom Brady, it was a pretty classy move to give that MVP truck to Malcolm Butler. I mean, he deserved it. I mean, he sealed that Super Bowl for the Patriots.
Absolutely, but you knew where that trophy was going to go. They always, especially with a guy, you know, like like Brady there, you know, they love to, I don't know, the rich get richer.
Hey, Jason Peter is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Hey, Jason, let's transition here. Obviously, it was a huge week on Wednesday. Let's talk about the 2015 Nebraska's football signing class. I mean, it wasn't a top 25 class, but what is your evaluation on some of the things that are taking place there and Mike Riley's job?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to tell, obviously, with the one thing I'll say is he seems like he's excited to be here. And yeah, I would be excited too, you know, it, with being a coach where, you know, you've spent most of your career out there at Oregon State, and now, you know, you kind of get the keys to, you know, a real nice car here. And now let's see what kind of you can do with it. But as far as the recruiting, I mean, they came in kind of late. You know, he was still putting his staff together. I think it was just a few weeks ago it was finally finalized. He saved, I think, some guys that were key to the class and I think important to the program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you look at what Jim Harbaugh kind of had out there at Michigan this year, and obviously he had less time than Mike Riley, but Michigan did not finish well, you know, with recruiting. And, you know, recruiting, it's a hard thing. I mean, you know, you can look at the success that, you know, the Alabamas and the Ohio States, yeah, and it's a numbers game. I mean, it's just a matter of, you know, some five-star kids will succeed. You know, not all of them are going to fail, but there's a lot of three-star kids that will succeed too. But, you know, Mike Riley, he got a few kids to stay on that were committed to Bo Pelini, and that was a good thing. But, you know, I think he also, it seemed like we, and I don't want this to sound bad, but we got kind of a few of, like, Oregon State trash, almost. You know, guys that he were committed to him out there. And then I don't know if it was just, you know, to fill scholarships or what. There were a few guys that maybe just didn't seem like they were at that level. But you know what? I mean, sometimes those guys end up being the best.
And, well, I will say, from what I understand, I mean, probably the biggest need that what Nebraska had was just the depleted linebacker corps. And we're going to have to get into that next week because Andy, our producer, is telling us we've got a break. We are flat out of time. And so much more, Jason. Let's talk some more next week about this year's signing class and just your complete evaluation of it as we break it down position by position, okay?
Sounds good, E. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR. You stay close.